Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing Podcast, a podcast where together we get to decode marketing one conversation at a time. In this episode, we dive into creating a content flywheel with co-founder of Presscart, Edgar Lee. He's the founder of Tens Design Agency and is deeply involved in sustainability through his work at Source Forward, while also being co-founder of Presscart, a platform that simplifies content marketing and media placement for businesses. Now, in the discussion, we unpack a powerful approach to content strategy, how to develop meaningful stories that resonate with your audience, and how to optimize content for every stage of that marketing funnel. We explore how Edgar blends technology and creativity to help companies scale through storytelling, while also sharing insights on how content should evolve to keep up with the changes in digital. A standout point in this conversation is the emphasis of storytelling being about positioning your brand as a guide to help customers solve problems, not about promoting your business. Sounds counterintuitive, right? We also touch on the impact of AI in content creation and how it can be a valuable tool for brainstorming and refining content, but never a replacement for unique, human-driven writing. This episode is packed with actionable insights that can help you elevate your content strategy and build a deeper connection with your audience. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Edgar, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Super excited to have you on here so that we can just kind of dive into a little bit of content strategy. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here, Katya.
Okay, so I always like to start off by letting our listeners know you a little bit or get to know you a little bit. So I've got my starter questions. Are you ready?
I believe so.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, my first question, it's an easy one. What was your first marketing role? Whether it had marketing in the title or it didn't, what was your first marketing role?
Oh, that's funny because this is the first time I actually got this question. So my first role was actually for a local TV station.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of ahead of its time. I think it was like 2008 or something, and it was digital only, so it was YouTube only. This was when YouTube was first getting started, so. A lot of companies weren't going the YouTube first route. I was an intern there, while I was in high school, and we kind of just went around and found stories and we recorded them. We hosted a local talent show. I would say that was very much a marketing role.
And sounds like it.
Yeah. A lot of interviews, a lot of just creating content, posting it. Very basic content editing at the time, but yeah, it was a cool first role. It kind of exposed me to, I think, some stuff I'm doing now that I didn't even think about for a long time. So
amazing. So that's where you got the bug, the marketing bug. Where are you at now? What do you do now?
Yeah. So right now I run a PR marketplace. It's called Presscart.com. Okay. We work with a variety of publishers, providers, and agencies to get our clients published on places like USA Today, Men's Journal, VentureBeat.com. You name it, we've probably published them on it. So, yeah.
What do you love about what you're currently doing?
The fact that we get to tell stories, I'd say. Mm-hmm. We get to, clients come to us. They're typically, oftentimes they're like founders, Y Combinator founders. They're doing some really cool stuff. Whether it's with AI or like electrification of the grid. We kind of take that kind of raw technical story and we're able to transform it to something that's a little bit more digestible to a general audience. We work closely with publishers that we understand their content guidelines. And then we mix that with, the client who can fit into their target audience or their niche that they talk to. And then we create content that works for both parties. So
Yeah, love
that's
that.
It really kind of jives with kind of where I'm at now as I guess 30, and I guess in my career at this point, where I believe that storytelling is one of the most important things you could develop as a business in 2024, 2025 and beyond.
To me, it sounds like you are a content sculptor. Is the way that you described it. It's the crafting and evolving and knowing the audience. And I think that's part of storytelling. And we will most definitely dive into that. But yeah, with the good comes the bad. I just asked you what you love. Conversely, what, if anything, if I had this magic wand and could pluck anything out of your job, what would that be to make it better?
Oh, I mean, there's certainly a lot. I think any agency knows this. The content operations can typically be what really derails either a campaign, or is just, it's none of the fun stuff to work on.
What do you mean by content operations?
Yeah, I mean, so at any given time, I mean, we're probably working on like 100 or so pieces of content. Mm-hmm. So just managing the processes for it, creating content, it's a type of art in a sense, right? Yes. There's a lot of creativity involved. And how do you kind of systemize something that's so kind of, subjective in terms of like what makes great content, right? Or what makes good content, like how do you set the standards and the baseline for that, and how do you build a team around that? So that's kind of, that's kind of the tricky parts of this business. That's, it was a lot easier to kind of define and handle when, we were a team of like three, but now as a team of 27 and trying to onboard, for us, it's writers, for us to onboard new writers, how do we tell them like, hey, this is our standard, right? And how do you follow that? And what, and how do you apply this across different types of industries and audiences and clients? For example, we could have a client that does plastic surgery, and then we have a client that does like healthcare AI. So it's like, or I guess those are two very different, but let's say, like a health supplement in a way, or even like a client that owns a horse farm. We've had that once before. So what I mean is that, the what makes great writing in either field becomes pretty different, especially when you're speaking to two different audiences.
Yeah.
So, it becomes an interesting kind of exercise to figure out, well, how do we kind of create systems to create this good baseline of content? And it's tough in that regard. And also, how do you kind of educate clients on what makes good content? I'm a part of like a good amount of kind of good content marketing groups as well. And the question, the difficulty a lot of content marketers that I've spoken to have is kind of convincing clients that they need to invest in content, that it's not just this thing that you can kind of just click with the flip of a switch, especially now with AI. A lot of people think like, okay, I can just tell ChatGPT or now Sora to create this video for me, and then I can just get that and publish it as is. And that's because, there's all these tools now that say you can create content in 30 seconds. Everyone believes that it should be created in 30 seconds. And the real answer is that it really depends, right?
Yes. Yeah. It depends. And to your point, it is very much so a process. One thing that you said that I absolutely love, and I absolutely say this all the time, is that content is, it is an art. I think marketing in general is an art. It is actually a mix of art and science, right? Because you have to be able to be creative, and it's not a switch. Wouldn't that be nice if it was a switch to be able to like switch on, okay, now write for this person about this, and can you have it done in an hour? I think back at the beginning of my career, someone I interviewed, and one of the questions that they asked me was, okay, if I come to you in the morning and I say, I want a blog about XYZ, how long is it going to take you to write it? Which I thought was an interesting question. Like, I think when I get into the flow state, it's very easy to write. I can write in 30 minutes, but to get into the flow state is a whole different thing. And you are in a situation where you have multiple content writers that have to be able to figure out what they're going to write, how they're going to write it, and ensure that that content is doing exactly what it was intended to do. So I can see how that would be one of the areas that if I could pluck it out or make it easier is what you would choose.
Yeah, absolutely. It becomes quite a, you know, it feels like great content is hard to scale.
Yes. Yes.
Right. So
very hard to scale. Very hard. Now, I would assume that with all that you do, that you have to really stay up to date with the trends. So I'd love to hear from you. How are you staying up to date with the trends? Is there a blog? Is there a newsletter? Is there a key opinion leader that you follow? Or is it books? I have no idea. How are you staying up to date with the trends?
For better or worse, you know, it's Twitter.
I didn't expect you to say that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'd say I get the ideas from, you know, I wouldn't say like they don't bill themselves as content marketers, right? But
yeah,
I'd say almost everyone on Twitter is a content marketer. I mean, it's oftentimes kind of founders or you know, growth marketers who are on there talking about their brand or kind of sharing how they created campaigns for their brand. And it's cool because it's, I found that to kind of be the single place which has kind of the most, like, to me, groundbreaking insights that I could find anywhere.
Oh, that's so interesting. I love that you've said that.
Yeah. For example, like over the weekend, like every time I open Twitter and I've set it up so that I've muted kind of all the things that I don't want to see on Twitter, because there can be plenty of that and kind of just distracting. So I really kind of want to just go on Twitter to kind of just see what kind of all the best creators are doing or the best like business owners or founders. And so I, you know, just over the weekend, I opened it up and I see this woman who's you know, who talks a lot about kind of TikTok marketing.
Yeah.
She talked about how when you're creating a influencer campaign, you don't want to, or a good tactic is to not mention the name of the company or the product that is being promoted in your influencer's campaign.
Interesting.
Because it kind of drums up curiosity. And oftentimes people are saying, oh, like, what is that product you're using? And then you kind of just, people are really engaging with the post rather than, and they also feel like it's not, it feels very organic. Like someone's kind of just talking about like, hey, like, you know, I'm doing the skincare routine, and they kind of show it off a couple times, but they don't mention exactly what it is. So it's like, oh wow. Now it's like, well, what is that? Like, you're not mentioning it. Like, is there a reason why you're not mentioning it? Like, it doesn't seem like you're promoting this, because otherwise you'd probably be like, oh, like this is so-and-so's skincare. Yeah. So it's kind of just a really interesting, like, I never would have thought of that. And it's like, well, then how can we integrate that into our marketing tactics? Or if we were to create TikTok content, that's something that we could probably utilize perhaps down the line. So, really interesting stuff. And the reason why I would say Twitter is kind of my go-to is that there's such a trend, I'd say, now in marketing where it's like, I'd say PR marketing, where it's build in public. It's to really kind of externalize all these stories that kind of used to be more internal and behind closed doors. And I'd say, I feel like that's kind of where everything is going. Because people, you know, in this day and age, people have fading trust in kind of faceless organizations, and they want to see, you know, who's the person behind, who are the people behind the company. What are they doing from a day-to-day basis? And all this is kind of creating marketing content. And it's kind of really genuine and really powerful. I feel like it's some of the best marketing content you could have, because it shows authenticity It's building a connection, a story, a growing story with your audience. And a lot of people are doing it these days, and to great effect. So, it's a really interesting time to be a marketer, I'd say.
It is a very interesting time to be a marketer. And one thing, you know, that I will say is we talked about, you know, being a marketer and then also content in general being an art. And what I think that you've just also described is the science part of it, right? You know, I hear that and I think, all right, well, let me test that out, right? Which is a very scientific view of like, does that work? Like that's how you figure out the trend, right? And figure out when and how to leverage it. It's never like this blanket statement that people push out. What I also think is really interesting about your choice of like kind of absorbing these trends via Twitter is that they're really quick. They're not meant to be like, people aren't doing these long in-depth, well, some people, I guess, but they're not doing something that's really long and in-depth. They're like hot takes, I guess, is probably the best way that I could describe it, right? And you're that's a hot take that could be something. And that's essentially how trends start, right? They've got to start somewhere before they become super trendy and everybody's in the know about it. That's incredibly fascinating. I'm ready to dive into content strategy with you. I would love to know, how do you begin developing a content strategy?
Yeah. Bringing it back to, you know, when you mentioned being asked to finish a blog post in a certain amount of time, what that question should be first is like, you know, well, why are we creating this content? Right. Mm-hmm. And then who are we creating this for? And what do we want to tell them? Right. And oftentimes, you know, also bringing this back to kind of the issues that I get a lot with other content marketers, is that it's hard to kind of get clients bought into like why we need strategy. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's such a fundamental thing. It's like, we kind of typically kind of just think of content creation as like, okay, just, you know, we create this content based off kind of just this general kind of, like, maybe I saw a trend on Twitter, right? And I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. like, let's just do what they did. And that's kind of how, you know, I think very, very basic, like very common marketing campaigns are done. But for us, I think it's with strategy, it doesn't have to be this big thing. It's kind of just like, okay, like as I mentioned, very simple questions that you have to ask yourself each time you create a piece of content. You know, why are we creating this? Who is it for? What are we trying to tell them? And then that will inform, you know, how you create the content. If you should be creating the content, where it should be placed, the channels, the what you're writing and the messaging, all that is informed from those three basic questions. But it has to start there, right? Sorry, I can hear you. I think.
How about I unmute myself so that we can actually record the podcast? I apologize, listeners. What I was saying was, let's say that I am a brand marketer or a content marketer, and I'm working for a brand that has some pretty consistent content. And the way that I'm defining content is consistent web content, right? So we've got mm-hmm. blogs that go out on a consistent basis, but I know that we want to be able to level up our content a lot more. Does that change your content strategy as you are creating it? And if so, how? And do you answer the same questions that you stated already?
You're saying in terms of like the cadence, how often we should be publishing?
Yeah. Is it how often? How do I know what else I should be creating from a content perspective? Because I think that a lot of times, you know, with someone who is, or with a company who's already creating content coming out, it can almost start to seem a little redundant on a topic. So how do you get creative with the content that you're creating? Do you start with the same process that you had just stated with those questions? Because I know I'm already developing like all of the content based on the questions people are asking, but how do you create that continuous cycle? I mean, I would assume that it just gets exhaustive at a certain point. Like, can you continue to be talking about the same thing from a brand perspective?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because for branding, I think what I've kind of learned is that, you know, it's not that you have to say it 1,000 times, right, for that message to resonate. We have to find 1,000 different ways to say it. That's kind of that's the challenge of being a marketer, right? It's like, you know, the message does get old, right? But that just means that you're not finding new and creative ways to kind of say it. And, you know, that's what we're getting paid to do. And that's where we can kind of flex our creativity and our capabilities. And, you know, something I've heard from Matt Gray actually is that quality is kind of the ultimate kind of attention grabber. Mm-hmm. And so if you're ever wondering, like, if I should, you know, create more or create better, you know, the answer should be always create better. Because in a sea of content, most of which is kind of average, you really need great content to stand out. And if it takes a little bit more time and you have to create a little push out, publish a little less, you're better off kind of just taking that time and creating something really unique and having a different way of saying it, right? Than to keep saying the same thing over and over again in the same fashion. So
I love that you just said that. And I also think that's a proponent for not leveraging AI to write your content, is you can't truly have a unique voice without and actually inputting your unique voice into mm-hmm. the content that you're writing. The other thing that you said that really resonates is that you have to hear things and see things and read things like 1,000 times for it to like really be consumed. I have told my team that more specifically when we're like publishing to social media about an article, I'm like, you can publish. One time a teammate had asked me this question. She said, well, I feel like we've already posted about this like 5 times. Like, won't people get bored? I'm like, you're assuming that every time we've posted, that same person is seeing that exact same post and reading that exact same. Like, of course, we're not saying like rinse and repeat in that like you repeat exactly what you say, but find different angles to say what it is that you want to mm-hmm. say, because you're going to grab people at different points. And I think that also is a good segue for how we incorporate storytelling with our content strategy, because I think the hook is the storytelling part. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on storytelling in general. What does that mean? Is it like, once upon a time there was, because I think that's what people think, but like, what is actually a storytelling framework that you see consistently used that's very mm-hmm. successful?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. I mean, I'm probably not so keen on kind of all the specific techniques. Mm-hmm. One that I've kind of, I think that kind of stuck with me because I read it this year, which is the brand story framework.
And yes. Obsessed with that. I read it on a consistent basis because I'm always learning something new. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just.
No, you're good. No. I'm glad that we're both excited about it, but you know, I think, you know, that one resonated with me because it mm-hmm. just kind of broke down kind of what are the most common, like the most common themes of any good story, whether it's from film or an advertisement, which is a kind of, it starts off with, and it also kind of, there's these kind of core tenets, mm-hmm. that it promotes, which I think is more important than the framework itself, which is that, you know, at the end of the day, like your client or the audience, they care about, you know, they're most invested in their own story, right? They're not invested mm-hmm. in you, right? Like it's all about how you relate to them, right? So that, like, keeping that mindset, like it's your, when you tell a story, it's about more so than understanding yourself. It's more so about understanding like your audience, right? And then understanding the relation between the two of you. Anyways, bringing it back to the brand story, it's like, it starts off with your audience and they have a problem, right? What is their problem? And then you come in as a guide, similar. And he mentions kind of, he brings in Star Wars, right?
You be the Yoda.
right. And you know, the Luke Skywalker, you know, everything like starts out, everything's okay. And then he encounters this problem and then he needs to find a solution. Then comes in the guide, which is, you know, Obi-Wan or Yoda, right? And then they give him the plan, and then he gets, then he fixed the problem, gets to it, you know, this great ending, and everything's good. So how he relates that to the brand is that the brand is, you know, your client is the hero of their own story. They're the Luke Skywalker. You as a brand are Yoda. You have to come. You're not kind of overshadowing them. You're kind of here to just help them along their journey, and you give them a plan, the solution for their problem. Because everyone wants to be guided. You know, they want to be the hero of their own journey, and they want to be led to somewhere that's better than where they were yesterday. So. Yeah, that's kind of the basic framework that I'd like to think about in terms of storytelling now. But really, as I mentioned, it's just thinking about, okay, like who am I telling the story to, and then who am I in their story, and always thinking like from their kind of their frame, right? It's never about like who I am. It's really mostly about who they are and how I relate to them, or how my company or business relates to them, and then crafting kind of the story from there. Right.
Yes.
So it's like, instead of like, this is how we help, is like, you can use us to help you, blah, blah, blah. So it's like always trying to think of from that frame. Right. Yeah.
There's less about, I or we do this for you. It's just already dive into it, because that even makes the content more compelling. Every time I think about storytelling, I think, have you seen those clocks at diners that it's a big clock and it says time to eat?
I don't think so.
But oh my gosh. I'm totally aging myself.
No, with this.
Usually in a diner, there is like a big clock and it says time to eat. And what I love about it is obviously it's time to eat because you're in the diner. But typically when you look at your watch or you're looking for the time, you're thinking, what time is it? And that clock is answering the time to eat. Not nice. Like you're going to eat here. That's what it always makes me think about, right? Like that shows me that you know what I'm looking at the clock for, right? And it's such a nuanced way. I love the clock because that's such a great depiction of it. Do you have any good examples of, you know, a brand who's done a really great job at kind of incorporating this storytelling effectively in their content?
It's like Coca-Cola. I mean, I think, I just found out today. I mean, you know, it's, there's a few different claims, but there's a pretty popular claim that Coca-Cola kind of popularized how we see Santa Claus today, which is that and it's interesting because, it's like the colors match. The kind of, you know, happiness aspect. And, you know, I think every year as I was growing up, I always remember kind of the big Coca-Cola ad that had Santa Claus in it. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if I was kind of really pushed to drink Coca-Cola, you know, for most of my life because of those campaigns, because those are... Yeah. Those are where I remember, I think, Coke. So they do a great job of storytelling. And they always have. I can't think of like a major mishap like Pepsi had, I think, a few times.
Oh, well, that's a whole other podcast. Not just because I'm not a Pepsi drinker. No offense to you.
I agree. I used to be big on Pepsi.
I'm a huge Coca-Cola drinker, and I think that you're right. There's a nostalgia that's associated with it, which I think is such a key component in storytelling. It's the emotional hook that you have with storytelling, right? Like, you get people by evoking an emotion, and that emotion can be happy. Obviously, we see that in a Coca-Cola, but it can also be a negative emotion as well, too. I think, you know, that's a high wire act to be able to like balance if you're going negative, but like the negative is something that you see in like the, is it progressive? No, it's probably not the progressive commercials. It's the guy who's mayhem.
Oh,
that
yeah.
I'm talking yeah. about, right? Like yeah. that's a negative yeah. connotation, but man, it makes right. you feel that way. You feel right. vulnerable. And yeah. like an interesting way that they've completely hooked it. Now I wish I could remember yeah. if it's progressive or not. I'll remember as soon as we're done. Yeah. But yell it out if you remember in the middle of it.
yeah, for sure.
Like it is, it's the emotional hook that is so important. Now, if we go, yeah. you know, we've talked about just kind of developing strategy. We've also discussed, yeah. you know, the connection between brand storytelling and developing your content. I'm also curious what your thoughts are in regards to, and this is connecting it into marketing specifically, into creating content for the entire funnel, from top, middle to bottom of funnel. What or how do you, or maybe you don't, I don't know, strategize with brands on, okay, who come to you and say, like, I want to make sure that I've got content that hits every part of my marketing funnel. What are your thoughts mm-hmm. on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, but I'd say we typically don't do middle or bottom because we are pretty much primarily currently focused on media placements, which is typically for us, I'd say always top of funnel. You know, people aren't reading, you know, kind of five healthcare trends on USA Today and thinking I'm ready to buy like right now. So
it's very true. It's very true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think our clients would love that. But it's just, it's more so to kind of just drive that top of the funnel awareness, and to reach new audiences, or new segments that they haven't reached before. So no, we don't currently offer that, but you know, that is something we're thinking about because oftentimes our services are kind of catered towards clients that already kind of, you know, we're typically working with like head of marketing or growth marketers. So they have their strategies in place. They know how to kind of mix this top of the funnel content with kind of more, you know, content that moves them further in. But we also oftentimes work with clients who don't have, you know, an existing marketing team or marketers with that expertise. So it's definitely something that, you know, we're considering on how can we help, you know, them create this full funnel, marketing plan. Especially since we realize that, you know, that could really make these media placements really, really, really valuable, right?
Yeah.
It's like if, you know, you get this article with five healthcare trends and then that gets them onto the page, like, you know, well, this company is, you know, this, if you really want to learn more about kind of the best trends, well, this company has created this kind of just like, state of kind of healthcare or health trends, like in 2024. You open that link, goes to their site, and then now you kind of read this kind of more in depth piece of content, and then it's like, and then it's the piece of content. It's like, okay, here, calculate your I don't know, your BMI or it wouldn't be something like that basic in 2024, but you know, give you a sense.
But it could be. You never know. Yeah, I also, well, then I wonder from a top of funnel perspective, is there, and you're probably going to say no, but just in case, is there a formula that you have found consistently time over time has really benefited the clients that you see that you're like, all right, top of funnel content, we're here to get you some awareness and maybe even some thought leadership. This is a bit of like the flywheel approach that we have. Because you did mention, now I can't remember exactly what you said, but all I remember is top five. I think, you know, those top five lists are like, you know, benefits and all of that stuff would be good from a top of funnel. But do you find that there's consistent content creation that allows you to create a flywheel of top of funnel content?
I mean, I think it gets down to being a little bit more technical. I think it's content on third-party sites. Clients aren't often thinking about how do I offer content that is sort of optimized for search queries because it's not on their own site. But since we kind of work together with clients and publishers on creating content that fits both, we're able to create content that does satisfy, you know, search queries and both parties want that, right? Both parties want more traffic. And so that's kind of the area where it's like, okay, like we can really work together here, and optimize content that actually is being searched for. So
yeah,
that is important, while also making sure that it is quality content. You know, we want to make sure that it's not overly promotional, or really kind of, it shouldn't really feel like it's promotional at all.
Yeah.
Especially when you're reading long form content or watching long form content, you know, you want storytelling. You want to learn something, right? You want to take away, even from like this podcast, for example, right?
Listeners
or viewers want to feel like they're gaining something from this, from where they spend their time, especially when there's so many choices. You have to make sure that your content kind of delivers on the promise of the title, and the title then has to deliver a promise, has to provide a promise, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of thing how I would sum this all up.
I love that. Now we touched on AI a little bit at the beginning of the podcast, but I'm curious on your opinion of what the impact of AI is in content development as you see it.
I mean, it's, I got a lot of answers about that, I think. Ever since ChatGPT came out, obviously, you know, generative AI and kind of the dominant feature, which is, you know, you ask ChatGPT, create this 800 word article for me, mention the client a few times. It's going to be published on this site, create it. Okay, well, that's wow. Like, it created that in 30 seconds, right? But
yeah,
the game has moved, I'd say, kind of far beyond that now. But, you know, whether it's because publishers don't want content to be AI generated, or kind of just the audience itself doesn't want content to be AI generated, right? So it's like, because it's trained on kind of the cumulative, like, average of the web. So you're just getting content that's just average. So
yeah,
that now kind of sets the floor. And it's like, it's caused a lot of kind of internal discussions with my team, and then with kind of our partners and other publishers as well, in terms of like, well, how do we actually use AI effectively while not like downgrading the quality that we're pushing out? We've also even noticed, like, with our own writers, that, you know, they came in as really good writers, and then with AI kind of, you know, I guess seeded away kind of their creative kind of taste and control over to ChatGPT, and kind of, you know, diminished their work in a sense. They kind of,
yeah.
So it was kind of interesting to kind of figure out, well, okay, like, how much should we use AI? And then kind of the answer we fell upon was like, the AI should not create the final piece of content.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to use it for as much of like the in between steps as possible, in terms of like finding, like, for us, we found like AI was really, really interesting when we use it to collaborate with clients, or we use it to collaborate between teams.
Mm-hmm.
The client can, you know, in terms of like how we ask questions for the client, like, we've been building this micro, like, question, we've been building this questionnaire app, right? Instead of sending out a blank Google Doc form, which has like 13 questions. It's just massive, like, questionnaire that typically you get from every agency. I once worked with an agency that sent me an Excel spreadsheet with 260 questions, and I was just like, this is awesome.
Too much.
Right, exactly.
It's too much.
You don't answer it, they're like, oh, like, it's not our fault for not delivering this, because you spent like 2 weeks to answer.
I know. And what's crazy is those kind of documents, all of the questions start to sound the same. Like, what do you actually want me, what are you trying to get to? And I think that's interesting too, because it's such a balance of being exhausted with answering it that you're coming up with just basic responses that kind of sound like the same thing. Oh, I hate those. Can you tell that I've received those before?
Yeah, trust me. It's a problem that we've kind of thought about a lot recently. And we realized it was an opportunity to, for our company to really set ourselves apart.
Yeah.
Because it's such a kind of like a kind of a problem that kind of every company, that it's something you have to do. And it kind of just became a thing where it's like, oh, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, there's definitely room to kind of innovate here, and especially with AI. So that's kind of where we're playing, right? How do we kind of make this process, which is so fundamental, because it's like, if you ask boring questions, you have boring responses.
Yeah.
And then if you get boring responses, then it's hard to create really interesting content from boring responses, right? So it's like, you know, so our idea was like, okay, how can we use AI to make this really engaging, to make it feel like a natural conversation, because that's really where you get all this great insights, right? If I were to speak to a client and I'm able to kind of, you know, go down rabbit holes if I need to, and uncover interesting kind of thought processes or interesting stories from that, that's something that's very hard to get if I just sent them a form, and then just expect them to kind of just do on their own, because most people are going to look at that and be like, I really don't want to spend a lot of time on this, so I'm just going to race through it and just give a bunch of, like, you know, really, really boring responses, because I'm being bored in this process.
Yeah. And boring and basic. I love your idea of talking to them. I also think this is a place where AI comes into play. And maybe this is what you were kind of alluding to, is, you know, being able to record a conversation and ask the questions, right? Like, I always feel like it's in between the questions. It's the responses in between the questions that I actually gain more of a better understanding of what people are trying to say, is in that in between, and being able to do and ask clarifying questions and then uploading that into AI and saying, okay, based on all of this, what are you thinking that the overview is of, you know, client A? That's a horrible prompt, but do you know what I mean? Like,
no, for sure.
To me, I definitely see AI as a way that can help you move a little bit faster. And I agree with you 100%. It is not the thing that's going to write the content, but it is the thing that can evaluate the direction of the content that you're going at, and like identifying the tone and voice. Is this consistent? How can I change this to, like, you know, first person all the way through, so it is consistent? Because I know that I've written things, long form content specifically, if I'm writing long form content, it's like who I start at the beginning and who I am at the end are two different people based on all of these thoughts that I have as I'm developing the content. So it's great to have, like, use it as like a sanity check.
Yeah. And not even just, I think a sanity check for us as writers, but also kind of just like, it's where I was talking about content ops. I think AI could be really, really, really interesting for content ops. And that's what we're working on. For example, where you're talking about, like, you know, instead of just like using AI to extract the pillars, well, it's like using AI to then quickly check with the client, are these your content pillars, right?
Yeah.
It's like that way, instead of like having to do back and forth, like over email, over the course of like 2 weeks, sometimes, like, you know, okay, you fill out this questionnaire. All right, well, from that questionnaire, we deduce that this is your tone of voice, your content pillars, like these are your story angles you'd be interested in. Now you can theoretically do it within, and we're trying to test this out, it's like theoretically within like an hour, you answer the question. Well, then the AI goes like, well, okay, from this, like we decided like these are your content pillars. They say yes or no. And then based on that, you know, kind of just do these like very smaller tasks, like where it's more of like, you know, like you said, sanity checks with the client before we even step in. That then kind of makes our job easier. Then we get kind of this prepared kind of brief from the client that's gives us all the information we need to then create great content. So
that's going to be your foundation. I could talk to you about content all day, but I will spare you and your time. And I have one final question. And that final question is, if you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing, I'll leave it up to you, advice that you give to yourself?
It's the question. It's the thing I'd still tell myself even today that I need to do, which is to do more personal storytelling. It's as I was talking about in terms of like the trend now is building public, because people don't just trust like, oh, like it's press cart. Like, what is press cart? Right. Well then, I don't know who's running it. I don't know what they believe in. I don't think I'm going to work with this, company. So it's like, you know, now it's way more effective. It's like press cart. Oh, like I saw that guy, Edgar, speaking about content and what he believes in, and how he runs his business, and how he, like, what he believes in, and like how he treats his clients. Like all that stuff is I recognize, and a lot of people are recognizing is hugely valuable for building your business 2025 or for marketing. Right. And that's what I always tell other people too. And it's like, but I don't do it enough myself. And even the little bit that I've done, like I've gotten people to kind of find me, because, you know, they find me on LinkedIn and reach out. Like I met, I met two people, like potential, like either like clients or partners, over the last 2 weeks because they found me on LinkedIn and reached out. So, or I hear from like, potential, like hire, like people that we're trying to hire. They're like, oh, I listened to your podcast, or, I read this thing that you wrote and I really agree with it. And it's like, you know, I can, it's already like the little bit that I'm doing, I already realize is making like a noticeable difference.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I can really build that flywheel and really, you know, tell a lot of stories as much as I can, ideally every day, you know, I can probably see a lot of really, really see the rewards of it soon. So.
And that's a good and great lesson learned, and a fantastic way to end a podcast that's about content strategy is to focus on kind of creating the content for yourself as well, too. It is great from a personal brand. You don't have to be a company. It's building who you are and your beliefs out there, and people will gravitate towards you. So I love that journey for you, Edgar. I can't thank you enough for coming onto the podcast and just kind of just sharing your insights. It's been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here. Had a fantastic conversation, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Welcome back. I hope that you found Edgar's podcast just as exciting and riveting as I did. But we all know I'm a bit of a content marketing junkie. Anytime we can talk about content, community, and AI, I'm all about it, right? So let's dive into the key takeaways. Here's what I've got for you. Key takeaway number one. We talked about the impact of storytelling that sticks, right? So we talked about the impact of storytelling in marketing because personalized stories do more than just capture attention. They build these long-lasting bonds with an audience. By integrating genuine experiences and the human aspects of a brand into our narratives, we transform passive listeners into passionate brand advocates. Remember, storytelling in marketing isn't just about kind of recounting events, not a laundry list. Don't think of that. It's about forging. Yep, I said forging. An emotional connection that resonates deeply with your audience. Make connections with your audience meaningful and memorable. And honestly, it's not just us talking about this. There is actually a bit of science of human nature behind it. Consider the power of narrative psychology, which is how we understand and make sense of our lives through stories. Now, these stories help us learn more about how people think, feel, and see the world around them. It helps us understand that the way we tell our stories can tell a lot about who we are and what's important to us. It's how we naturally understand the world. By framing your marketing around a story, you align your message with the way people think and process information. I'm really tongue-tied today. I apologize. What was I saying? You align your message with the way that people think and process information, which enhances recall and emotional attachment. And that's honestly what it is that you want when you're telling your brand story. Key takeaway number two, and hopefully I say this without any blunders. I think maybe I just need more coffee. I don't know. Well, key takeaway number two, use technology, AI, to boost creativity. Here is what I'm talking about. Automating ingenuity, which really means using technology like AI to handle creative tasks that we usually think would need human imagination. Basically, it's about programming computers to help come up with ideas, solve problems, or make decisions, which speeds up these processes and can really lead to new creative solutions that might not have, you might not have thought of before. It's allowing us to focus on other important tasks while the technology handles the routine or complex parts that can really be automated. AI, for example, because you know I like me some examples, has the capability to analyze a vast amount of consumer data, enabling marketers to tailor their campaigns precisely to use to a user's preferences and behaviors. Here is where AI can truly be a game changer in content marketing by giving us the tools to automate the routine. Here's the advice on leveraging AI for content marketing. Start small. Look for repetitive tasks that can be automated without really sacrificing the personal touch. Use AI for things like data analysis and the basic kind of content generation, and then apply your creativity on top of it, right? It's about getting the ugly first draft out in a safe space. Type it all in and let AI make sense of it so you can shape it into whatever your masterpiece is going to be. And my final key takeaway is quality is way more important than quantity. Edgar and I really align on this. In a sea of content, an island really stands out. I think we often run into this pitfall of producing mass content without really a strategic thought. Quality is that island. Before every episode of this podcast, for example, I let each guest know that my goal behind every interview is for you as listeners to walk away with one insight. It always sounds so small, but think of how much you consume across the board. You're inundated. So by focusing on producing high quality, engaging content, you ensure that your efforts hit the mark effectively with your audience and lead to a stronger brand differentiation. It's worth the investment in high quality visuals and well-researched information to pair with your written content too. As content consumption preferences really evolve, having robust, visually appealing, and informative content can significantly enhance engagement and retention. That's what we want. We don't just want to capture it, we want to keep it. Think about your story and create something that is going to actually impact people. A small impact can make a lasting impression. So what did you take away from today's episode? I want to hear it. Let's keep this conversation going. A special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Eich. And thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic but grounded in reality. This is Katya signing off.